Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. And good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala, New York podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. And today on the podcast, Acharya Eric Spiegel. He has been on the podcast before, as you may or may not know. Acharya is one of those fancy words. It means big shot teacher, loosely translated. This was a talk he gave at our weekly Dharma gathering a couple weeks ago. And it's about basically what is the view of the Shambhala tradition. And also, what does it mean to have a view, to adopt a view in our lives? So I think this is a timely talk. Also, Acharya Eric Spiegel is teaching our introductory meditation weekend, which is called Shambhala Training Weekend 1. And that is happening the weekend of November 10th. So Friday night, November 10th, Saturday the 11th, and half day Sunday. If you've been listening for a while, if you have been interested in pursuing meditation in a somewhat more intensive context, I highly recommend Shambhala Training Weekend 1. It's a great way to deepen further. And Acharya Eric Spiegel is a very experienced and very gentle and thorough teacher of Shambhala training. So visit our website, ny.shambhala.org. Go to classes and programs and click on Shambhala Training Weekend 1 for the weekend of November 10th to check it out. Okay. Here is Acharya Eric Spiegel.
So I wanted to talk this evening about our view. So view is a big topic in the Shambhala teachings, and view basically means like, what are we, when we stand at the window of our life or at our mind, what are we looking out on? Are we looking out on a junkyard? Or are we looking out at mountains? Or, like, when we look out from where we are we, do we feel a sense of confusion and depression? Or do we see actually some pathway and some place that we want to go? And I think that that's a really big question, probably always, but it feels like a really big question these days for me. I realized really just over the last couple of days that since about May of last year, I've been addicted to the news cycle, and that it's time for me to peel away. That I feel like I'm looking out at the trash pile too intensively, and that I need to actually shift my view a little bit, which doesn't mean as... Joy read my little blurb about my life, my whole life story there, that I grew up in a really politically active left-wing family, you know, and so I definitely have a view, a political view, which I have not abandoned in all these years, and of feeling a responsibility for society, for people of all different walks of life. And yet somehow just reading all the brightest people in the world talk about everything that they know right now doesn't seem to be the most useful way to actually create betterment. It actually seems like it's maybe I personally need to bypass that. So, or at least a little bit. So this just really led me to this whole question mark about our own view, and I feel like this is one of the most important things that we teach here is what is the view of your life? So shifting away from politics, what is the view of our life? Most of us don't really know, right? We're kind of just trying to get by day to day. When we were young, I feel like we very often had some, in the best circumstances at least, when we were young, we had some real idea of, like, aspiration of who we wanted to be when we grew up, of what the ideal was, you know. And it could be anything, you know, it could be creative or intellectual or parenting or love or money. It could be all of these different things. And then somehow the day to day we fell into something, did something at school, and then we got a job or we met someone, and then life happened, and we've kind of been on a journey. And it's very, very difficult to rethink our journey while we're also running on that treadmill. So the Shambhala teachings are really about shifting how we see ourselves and our relationship to the world. And the meditation practice we just did is really the whole story in a nutshell, that there's actually someone here who actually has a mind that can relax and open and a heart that can expand. And also there's someone here who's completely preoccupied with a million different things, with all of the things that we like and don't like and want and don't want in our life. So there's this constant... And those things that are so, like, demanding of us, like we have to get this or we have to stay away from that or we have to find someone or we have to get enriched or we have to accomplish our art or our whatever we think our meaning is, our parenthood or our children's success or our love life success, whatever we think our meaning is, we are so caught up trying to accomplish it that other part, which is the wisdom part, the sense that our minds are actually, in the Buddhist teachings, it says that the nature of your mind is clear and present knowing. So that's hard to actually say what that exactly means, but it definitely has an image that isn't like struggling against the number one train at rush hour. Clear and present knowing has a sense of brilliance, lightness, and clarity is obviously like the primary word there, and clarity means that we actually can see, right, which is also related to knowing, that we actually can see what's around us, see where we're going, see where we are. So we have these two things, but somehow the clear and present knowing is less apparent, you could say, than our email and the news feed. And I'm not a Facebook guy, but a lot of people like the Facebook feed, you know, the kind of continual stream of like things that don't actually pertain to you that seem very important in the moment. And so to me this feels like a really important topic. It's not a major topic. In fact, there's not that much to say about it. But yet it's really, it feels really essential that every person who has the inspiration to, on a Tuesday night, actually come to the Shambhala Center or come do something that like could nourish some corner of your being, that means that there's like this impetus that we're trying to figure out, well, how can we make sense of our life? And so it feels really important that this is a to me, this is like a keystone, is that we have to actually like step back and settle, which is the meditation, and from that settled place then look out again and have a clear decision about our path. It doesn't have to be like, oh, yes, I'm like, in this minute, I'm making a decision. But I mean that we're actually engaging in the conversation about who we are, where we are, where we want to be. Nobody, as it happens, is going to live forever. It's very unusual, most unusual. So, although I'm thinking of opening a cryogenics parlor, so that means, you know, that we're all, like, we have decisions to make, essentially, or they'll be made for us, you know. And so, in the Shambhala teaching, so the, just to give a little background here, this is a Buddhist meditation center, which means that the teachings of the Buddha stem from Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived 2,500 plus years ago in India. And the Shambhala teachings are a strand of the Buddhist teachings. So the Shambhala teachings have a particular point of view, and the point of view of the Shambhala teachings is that we can actually develop sanity in our life, in the middle of the chaos of our life, in the middle of our careers, in the middle of our families. So that's really the point of view of the Shambhala teachings, is that people actually are sane and wise and have kindness actually naturally inbred, that's part of our DNA, and that it can be cultivated. And so, but to cultivate it, it's like, just like if you had a garden or a farm, you know, if you just throw seeds out, you know, then anything can happen, and some may take root, but a lot of other weeds will also take root. So if you want the seeds if you start to know which seeds you want to cultivate, then you have to prepare that ground, you know, which means like establishing priorities in your life, like, so coming to Tuesday night, that's not a bad idea. But also, you know, just developing a meditation practice, taking a class, or whatever, you know. Everyone has to take responsibility, and I feel like at this particular moment in our cultural cycle, there's a lot of negative energy, and it's easy to be pulled down. It's easy to be pulled down by your own negative energy, right? Your own fears or your own uncertainty and your own sense of aloneness or lack of fulfillment. So it's easy to be pulled down by that, but then it's like at this moment it feels doubly or quadruply or beyond that easy to be pulled down by the general stream of events all over the world regarding climate, regarding political backlash and so on. So then I think it's really, really important that we actually build ourselves up, that we take time to actually nourish the things that we can nourish, and to create the support that we need to have. So regular meditation practice, some kind of structure of friendship and community, and for me, so receiving teachings is, for me, is like a really big part, is the sense that we actually engage in something meaningful. But that could be other things, you know. I'm a really big fan of reading good novels and even of watching excellent TV, even if some of it's depressing. Because I feel like, well, that's also art, and it actually reflects intelligence, and it reflects all of these qualities of kindness and wisdom and dignity, even if it's... So there's a lot of different ways, but I feel like everybody has... This is a time when it feels really important to take personal responsibility for your own sanity. And that everybody, that I feel, and you might not feel, but I feel like it's really important that people what occurred to me for myself is this sense that, oh, even though I really love listening to really smart people talk about all the things that are going on, at some point it's just too much. It's not helping. It's just sort of like poisoning this. It's the stream. There's not enough room for the uplifting aspects as well. So it's sort of important to leave room for that, so that the seeds can actually grow. Right? They can actually reach the sunlight. So I would like to just, that's really all I felt very strongly that what I wanted to talk about tonight was changing your view, or shifting our view and understanding what view is. Like, so just to kind of recap, so it's clear, you go home and you said, oh, I don't know what he talked, it was a good talk, I have no idea what he said. So what I said is, the view is, what do you look out on in your life? Like in the window of your life, when you raise the shades and look out the window on your life, what are you looking out on? And if it's not what you want to be looking out on, then let's move things around, right? Let's look out a different window. Let's figure out what we have to do to actually start to see our own goodness, our own humanity, and to actually feel that, and to feel that that actually is being encouraged in our life, and that it's not just weight upon weight, but actually that there's a possibility of flourishing. So it's not magic. It's everything takes effort. Everything takes engagement and effort. It's called practice, just like playing a musical instrument is called practice, right? That you think it'd be so great to play the flute. Ha ha ha. So just, it takes an enormous amount of work, and sometimes the meditation can be really embarrassing because you're sitting there with all of your mind, all of the kind of the quagmire of your own mind, and that can become really apparent to you. So just like playing scales, you know, that don't sound brilliant, it just means patience and being present over and over again, and then kind of going gradually, mind settles. And as mind settles, it actually opens. That's the really good news, is that as your mind settles, whether in one particular meditation session, but also as you practice cumulatively, your mind settles and then it also opens. It becomes more supple, becomes more flexible, and it expands. So your mind expands, your view expands, and your heart expands. So with that, now that I've repeated myself completely, if you would like to talk about anything at all, including questions about things I've said or about meditation practice, I'd love to entertain your questions.
So I thanks for interrupting the meditation with the reminder to come back from your fantasies. And that's probably my biggest practice question is I don't seem to have a fire under my hair or my pants, wherever you want to put it, but to come back. It's like they're pleasant thoughts, and it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with that. So maybe...
Yeah. So... It doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with that. So that's actually really the point of meditation is that it's not, it's actually different than the norm. So the norm is that we just kind of are always sailing down the river of our thoughts. And meditation is that we interrupt that. So I want to say a couple of things. So in addition to the wonderful Acharya Eric Spiegel teaching a level one of Shambhala training, the very weekend before that, Sakyong Mipham Rinpoche is coming to New York and will be teaching here, or I think at Ethical Culture, actually. And he'll be introducing his new book. But I wanted to... The two books that I'm... He has a book on running and the mind of meditation, which I have not read since I will never probably run, ever. It's not my thing. So I'll probably play flute before I... So when he writes the book about playing flute, I might read it. So, but he has a white book called Turning the Mind into an Ally, which is the book on meditation, and then a red book called The Shambhala Principle, which is sort of what I was... jumping off from tonight, from a talk called Cheer Yourself Up, or from a chapter called Cheer Yourself Up, is what sort of in what I grabbed onto this evening. And in Turning the Mind into an Ally, where he really like gives the full practice of shamatha meditation, you know, he says, when you sit down, you make a gentle allegiance to actually be engaging the technique. So to me, having read that book 30 or more years after I started practicing meditation, that was an enormous light bulb going off that, oh, you actually have to sort of commit to it. You actually have to like say, this is what I have these 20 minutes. It's not a lot, you know, my life's busy. I have 20, 30 minutes, 10 minutes sometimes. This is what I actually am going to do something meaningful here. It's not just the sailing down the same stream, but that I'm actually going to plant the intention to notice. So then it's really important that that doesn't become aggressive, that you're not like trying to like stop your thoughts, but that you're simply shifting, like you're putting a little break in the stream. Because otherwise, from birth to death, it's just like, oh, I like this, I don't like that, I like this, I don't, oh yeah, I want some more of that, oh, I'm gonna stay away from that person. And so it's just the same. It's literally that's going on all the time. So William.
And I forgot the third question, but the second one is...
oh, you had two. Okay, three? Okay.
Two.
Okay.
The intention of following through on... how did you put it?
Intention.
Versus, you know, too much effort, over effort, and discerning what you should put your intention on. I mean, is that something that just you can't really know until you practice for a while, or?
Well, you have been practicing for a while.
Yeah, not very productively, apparently.
I think it's just something that in our culture, we don't think about where are we going? Is this where am I going? And I think in our culture, we don't think about that after we're about age 5. And that the whole culture kind of says, oh, just get ahead. You just need to get ahead. You need to have a spouse or whatever it is, whatever niche you're in, you know, right. That you need to, proclaim your poetry or proclaim your intellect.
It's kind of and I've had this happen to me a number of times in the last 20, 30 years about kind of a midlife crisis, if you want to call it, a minor one. You know, where do I go from here, kind of?
Yes. Well, and also, it's not just when you have a midlife crisis, but it's really all the time that we don't really know where we're going. And the crisis is that every now and then we bump into a wall and we realize, oh, I haven't known where I'm going for a while. So typically, for friends who've been married and had kids, 15 years into that cycle, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
And so, or late 40s for most men, it's mid to late 40s, and maybe for women it's a different time of sorts. But, so I think it just bears examining and just thinking about what your priority is. What do you care about? What do you want to cultivate in your life?
So I'm wondering if you have any guidance or just any thoughts on physical, physiological pain while sitting. Is it similar to an itch where I should simply wait for it to pass? Is it worthwhile to shift, to get rid of it, to come back to the breath? Anything to speak on that?
If this were a Zen center, you would just sit. You wouldn't move at all, no matter what happened. Shambhala isn't that tight, and maybe we're sometimes too loose. But so I have what I say, which isn't really what I do, but it's a basic framework that I think works, which is that. So there's two parts to the itch and two parts to the pain or whatever. One is the pain or the itch, and the other is you're thinking about it. And so in meditation, we know what to do with thoughts, right? You notice them, and then you come back to your breathing. But we get caught up. We start focusing on the thought about the itch or about the ache, and then that's all we're doing. So usually what I... So the way I present this, which, as I said, I promise you, this isn't actually what I do, but it's a general sense of how I think about it, is that basically, you notice it, and the first time you relate to it as a thought, and you shift your awareness back to your breath, being present in your breathing. And then if it comes right back, or back soon, you do that again, and then the third time you just move, you just stretch or... and while I was sitting there, I do a certain amount of this kind of thing. So if you need to scratch something, but if you scratch or move every time you think you need to scratch or move, then the whole room is basically going like, so the monkey cage. And so then that's just a way of slowing the whole thing down and relating to at least some of it as a mind event rather than just a body event.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I totally have this coherent, so I'm going to try to talk it out. But my view consists of a lot of other people's views. And there are the other views that feel dangerous to society. And then some views of people who I think I used to feel deeply connected to, who are so overwhelmed by like the next crazy thing, the next crazy thing, they kind of have had no choice but to retreat inward and focus on their family, focus on the things that are close, because that feels like the only place of respite. I'm wondering from a Shambhala perspective, and it sounds like you have a very unique sort of family history of how to tread the line between some version of political advocacy or advocism and acceptance and impermanence. Because I fear that, you know, just sitting and just accepting feels dangerous. And I'm really struggling with how to integrate the two without, I don't know, compromising one or the other.
So I don't know that, I don't have a complete answer, obviously, or I'd be president. So I know that aggression, so there's like anger, which moves you to do something, and then there's just aggression, which is you throwing your shit at something. You're just screaming or lighting a fire, which isn't actually constructive or beneficial, and which creates more negative karma in the world. So it, like dropping a bomb, like we're going to drop a bomb on someone because they're so bad, right? Or assassinate someone because they're so bad. So that only creates more chaos, which you would know if you had read and watched Game of Thrones. So it only, like, somehow violence and aggression aren't the answer. So the receding that you described is really depression, is like I just like feeling pushed down and impotent. So there's another thing, which is cultivating your heart, and that letting that heart actually have great strength and power, and then from that, that becomes your view. And then when you're looking at ways in, ways into the puzzle, then your insight comes from the point of view of great heart. So meditation isn't, is, it's a myth that meditation is just about the mind, about peace. So we say shamatha, peaceful abiding, but the reason we do shamatha is because when your mind settles down, all of a sudden your heart is present. When your mind is like, all of our minds are completely like overwhelmed with even just the details of our personal banking, you know, just like trying to make sure that everything's paid and nothing bounces and the credit card and blah, blah, blah. So all of that becomes all we know to some degree, and the heart doesn't have any sort of chance to flourish. So it's when that mind, in the Shambhala teachings, the Shambhala teachings are taught in a series of stages which are kind of represented by four animal, sort of animal spirits, you could say. And tiger is that sense of settling. And when you settle like a tiger, when you actually connect to the earth, then the next thing is snow lion, which is this really like bouncy, joyful thing that comes out of the settled mind of the tiger. So that's my answer from the point of view of these teachings, and also from the point of view of my own life, is to not retreat into depression, but to really make sure that my heart, my mind is steady and my heart is big. And then, you know, then everything ebbs and flows, so things that are currently seem powerful will undoubtedly crumble, because that's just the nature of impermanence. So then when things crumble, then it's really important that there be beings around who are actually ready to establish sanity in its place. So, and I don't, you know, I don't, beyond that, I don't have like real answers of like who you should vote for or anything, so.
I wish I did.
So that question and answer got a little bit, I think, at what I was wondering about. But in the talk, you gave the example of yourself and how you are kind of seeing how you could be doing things a little bit differently in your own life with regards to the news. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about in the Buddhist sense, kind of that right view. Is it something that is supposed to be pretty consistent, you know, that if we're actually kind of looking out that window, it's a steady backdrop, or is it more...
Say that again. I missed it.
Yeah. Is, in the Buddhist sense, right view kind of supposed to be a steady backdrop, that whenever you can manage to look out that, you know, metaphorical window, that's what you're seeing, or is it changing and being tweaked constantly? Like, how does it relate to, you know, the bounciness of thoughts? There are some days where I feel like I'm not even aware of view, right? Yeah. I'm not even in a place with a window. Right. And then there...
But you might be aware of your, like, of how crappy you feel, so, which is, in a sense, then being aware of, oh, I can't find the window. So that's not bad. That's still aware of that there should be a window somewhere in this room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a changing, like, view.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, everything changes continually, right? You know, and also you could get up in the morning and feel great, and by 9 o'clock somehow be totally in a different space. Mm-hmm. So...
And meditation creates that pause that can allow the view to
reset. Yeah, and particularly what I'm really promoting here tonight is not just one session of 20 minutes of meditation, but of actually establishing meditation in your life. So that it gradually there's like a sense of like the tide brushing against the shoreline, so, you know, kind of continually, or of a, there's, you know, just of this sense, or like the way rain, you know, hits stone and nothing happens, but over time it actually does happen, you know, hopefully not quite that slowly, so, so. And then maybe we'll see what happens.
Hello.
Yeah, it was my question was related to what you just said about extending your meditation to, extending to your daily life, like to everything basically that you do. Like, for example, like in the morning when I meditate. I tend to think, okay, I'm gonna still, you know, keep on try to keep on with this practice while I'm preparing a coffee or while I'm doing some other chores.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it sometimes feels like you did something that you don't remember that you did it.
So this never happened to me.
No, it's like, you know, you do things automatically,
yeah.
And that I think that's kind of wrong in a way. I mean, not wrong.
Well, even just that's so there's a relationship between a lot of different things that we hear about and learn about. And so mindfulness is, so part of our shamatha practice is just mindfulness. It's just, but the thing is that sometimes mindfulness is taught as an end in itself, that we just want to become mindful, like very present. So, and that's not really the way I'm talking about meditation. That's not my idea of meditation. My idea of meditation is that it actually opens our life up in a much bigger way, you know, which is both meditation and some studying or teachings that kind of keep pushing you to look further and explore a little and understand your own experience a little bit more. But at the same time, practicing mindfulness in all different ways, like how you're doing basic things or just walking down the street, you know. Walking down the street, it's like, oh my God, you could be doing so many things while you're just walking down the street. Or you could very simply walk down the street and actually notice, like, your environment. And I actually, I had an interesting experience of walking down the street. I just spent a month teaching in South America, I was in Brazil for 2 weeks in Sao Paulo, and in Sao Paulo, every sidewalk is different. Every building has its own sidewalk. And so as you walk like from one corner to the next, you might have like 10 different kinds of sidewalk, and they all go different grading and different bumpiness. And some could be made of like hand-laid tiles that actually are really terrible to walk on, and others, and then there could be a driveway that just suddenly drops off. If you're going to actually walk down the sidewalk in Sao Paulo, you actually have to really be present. It's like there's no room for texting or or thinking about your love life or anything. So, not that I think about that, but so have one. Not that I have one. So
this morning, I think a lot about insanity and sanity. And the surrender to insanity. Is there a definition, or what do you think sanity is in the Shambhala teachings?
I use the words wisdom and confusion. So I'm not sure it's different, but it feels, for me, it's the words I'm more comfortable with than insanity. Like I think of schizophrenia, I think of someone who's really does not have a grasp on reality, but yet often we have a perfect so-called grasp on so-called reality, and yet we're mired in confusion. So without being insane. And also, like my teachers, you know, I would say they're incredibly wise, but not necessarily sane from a conventional point of view. So there's different things going on there. And so I think wisdom is really about discovering this sense of clear and present knowing. And in Shambhala teachings, we say basic goodness, or, you know, the sense that you have actually, that you are that you are possibility, that you could be some, you can do anything, you can actually be something. So that's what I would call wisdom, that sense of connecting to that great ocean of possibility. And then confusion is all the ways we limit ourselves by being fixated on things that will never bring us happiness. I mean, they just won't, you know. They'll only bring us a sense of regret and loss or pride, which will lead to jealousy. So, I mean, I hate to paint such a bleak picture of the way we live, but so I think that there are those two things always exist, coexist in ourselves, that this great ocean of wisdom and also just a roiling river of confusion. And they're always there, and we can decide which we want to actually bring forward, but we have to do that. It takes effort. That's really what this talk has been about, that it takes effort, and we need to make a decision.
Thank you, Acharya Eric Spiegel. And again, Acharya Spiegel is teaching Shambhala Training Weekend 1, the weekend of November 10th. Go to ny.shambhala.org to check that out and register. Or for any of our upcoming programs, classes, weekend retreats, community events, you're welcome. Our Tuesday night Dharma gathering is every week, Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, weekly Dharma gathering. You can come, visit the center, hear these talks live and in person, meet the teachers. It's a great time. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions. If you're not in the New York City area, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. Otherwise, keep listening. Later.